Hey, welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus on this Monday, October 9th. Wait, no, it feels like October 9th out there. It's a chilly one with temperatures still hanging in the 50s this afternoon across the entire area. It's a chilly one. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki along with our Ag Director Bridget Riedel. And Bridget, it doesn't feel like we're going into the second week in June here, that's for sure.
Yeah, it might not, but we know it is. And cripes, I got some crop consultant friends out there wearing shorts today because that's just what they do.
No thanks. Yeah, it is a chilly one with temperatures in the 50s, mainly cloudy skies. And we're going to see the clouds hang tight. We'll see maybe a break or two as we head towards sunset, but then we'll see skies clear overnight tonight. Now, the pick day of the week is going to be tomorrow. We're going to have temps in the low to mid 80s tomorrow. And then we're in the 70s for the rest of the week. As we head into Thursday and Friday, it looks like we'll see a chance for showers, maybe a few thunderstorms as well. And Bridget, I was catching your nooner broadcast that you had with Gary Lezak. You had that posted on our social media, and Gary had a good point about the big severe weather outbreak that took place, I believe it was December 27th, 28th, across the southern tier of the U.S., mm-hmm. and how that will cycle back. And I believe that cycles back in our area mid-month. And sure enough, our models are now indicating that we are going to start getting into a more active weather pattern as heat approaches and builds in from the south. As we head towards mid-month, you get these, we call them ridge riders or thunderstorms and some of those severe to develop right on the edge of that heat dome. And that heat dome is slowly building north as we head towards mid-month. So it'll be interesting to see how that pans out for the area.
Well, absolutely. And just to clarify, if somebody's wondering what that discussion was, on Fridays on Twitter, also known as X, I do a live chat. And I did one, it was actually back in March, with Gary Lezak, who's going to be joining you on Thursday here on mm-hmm. the show, Dean. And it's called the Nooner Chat. And it just posted as a podcast wherever you get your podcast, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, et cetera, Podbean. So feel free to go take a listen to that. Like Dean mentioned, that discussion with Gary.
Yeah,
always welcome to.
Yeah, and we'll be talking more about that severe weather potential mid-month when we have mm-hmm. Gary on the show this Thursday. So you'll want to make sure if you have any questions for Gary to tune in on Thursday. We'll be taking those. But before we get to that, we are doing a big contest here at WDAY with the grocery giveaway. And we've had some people that have already qualified, and we've had a lot of people register. $10,000, a year's worth of groceries, $10,000 mm-hmm. is the grand prize. So today's qualifier, and you have 9 minutes and 70 seconds to call. Today's qualifier is Mark Rambo. Mark, you've got 9 minutes and 70 seconds to call. 701-293-9000. Again, that's 701-293-9000, Mark. And better make sure I hope you're listening. You don't want the wife mad. Don't want the wife mad when you're missing out on the possibility.
Ticking.
Yeah, when your possibility of missing out on $10,000 worth of groceries.
Depending how many kids you have, that could be like one Costco run, really. So this is a good fit for many people. School starting back in August, this is a great way to start taking care of things over the summer months and when school starts in the fall. So, yes, please, Mark, give us a call. We're looking forward to hearing from you on the JLA Insurance phone line, 701-293-9000.
Yeah, and again, Mark Rambo. Mark, again, you better hurry up. You got about 9 minutes left.
It goes fast. So one of the things that's happening this week is the Midwest Ag Summit. And today we are the Midwest Ag Summit studio. What's that summit mean? Well, this is hosted tomorrow morning from 8 to 11 a.m. It'll be at the Red River Valley Fairgrounds. It's held by the Fargo-Moorhead and West Fargo Chambers of Commerce. And we're going to see business speakers attending from the Federal Maritime Commission, BNSF, Duluth Seaway Port Authority, of course, MINDAC Farmers Cooperative, NDSU, the Bank of North Dakota, the Consulate General of Canada, who, by the way, will be speaking tonight at 6:30 at the Pelletier Complex on NDSU's campus, and also the National Council of Farm Cooperatives. You can go ahead and register for this event. Again, this is the Midwest Ag Summit, and the event will be held out at the fairgrounds. I'll be there tomorrow. It's a lot of stuff this week. Tomorrow is that. Wednesday, I'll be part of the Bushel Buddy Seed Conference, which will be downtown at the Fargo Civic Center. I'll be on a panel. Thursday, I am running a workshop at Cultivate. That is followed by Ag Tech Alchemy, which will be held at Chubb's. That's a chance for folks who are pitching new ideas in ag tech to get together. There's receptions each night. So there's things happening all over town. I'm just going to pack extra clothes and might just a pillow because I might wind up napping in my pickup. I'm not really sure how the whole week's going to go. It's a lot.
It is a bit busy. Yeah. Well, you're always busy, but you're especially busy this time of the year. That's for sure.
Yeah. This is June. Holy cow. Wow. You guys, and tonight is also North Dakota Stockmen's Association began their regional roundups for the spring. Tonight's event will be in Leonard, North Dakota. That starts at 5 o'clock with a social hour. 6 o'clock is a steak supper and a business meeting. That'll be at the golf course in Leonard. Last Friday night, they did the same thing in Portland. And then there will be four other locations around the state that will be having their regional roundups throughout the next week. A lot of great things going on, a lot of updates for people.
Absolutely. And once again, if you didn't catch it at the top of the show, our qualifier for today for the $10,000 grocery giveaway, Mark Ranbo. Mark, you have a little less than 7 minutes to call 701-293-9000 to qualify for the grand prize. So again, Mark Ranbo. You got a little under 7 minutes to call us, 701-293-9000. We've had everybody registered.
Been called out.
And they've called in. So come on, Mark. Or if somebody knows Mark, you better get a hold of him. He's got about 6 minutes left to call to qualify.
Mark, you've got 6 minutes and 30 seconds. Ladies and gentlemen, if you know Mark and he's not answering his phone, go to his house. Bang down the door. If he's at work, call his place of work. Show up unannounced.
There you go.
Get his attention. He's got a call now. He's got 6 minutes and 17 seconds.
Uh-oh.
Because at this point, Addison is strongly considering creating a fake ID in the name of Mark Ranbo,
yes.
So he can get in on this deal this week. It's not a bad idea, I must say.
No doubt. Yes. Well, we've got one of our favorite guests here in the studio, Don Kinsler. He'll be joining us after the break. And if you have any questions for Don, make sure to give us a call, 701-293-9000, 701-293-9000. I've got a whole list here of questions here for Don that some of our listeners were asking last week. So, again, if you have any questions for Don, make sure to give us a call, 701-293-9000. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
And a big hello from the Midwest Ag Summit studio. Mark Ranbo, we're looking for you. We need you to call in about 2 minutes time or less if you'd like to get qualified for our $10,000 grocery giveaway. And we're giving that away. Dean, do you recall the date? It's like July 9th. Am I wrong? Am I close? Darn it, I should have this right in front of me, but I think that's about when we're doing it.
I believe so.
I'll look.
I will. Let's see.
I'm looking.
Okay. We're both checking our emails.
We are. And it looks like a Thursday, July 10th is when we will be doing that. Yep. And that is groceries for 1 year. So Mark, you're going to want to get in as fast as you can. I wouldn't want to miss out on this.
Man, no doubt. So Mike, what's he got, Addison? Right. About a minute left?
Got a minute and 15 seconds.
Boy, Addison, he's prompt in there, isn't he?
I've got my stopwatch in here. I'm ready to go. Management told me to start this timer. I have started this timer.
Well, this is a perfect time for me to remind you then that your tech support should be smooth to help your farm and ranch run more smoothly. And as you are out and about for Ag Tech Week, you are welcome to visit with Chris Sherman. He'll be at many of those opportunities. Again, Chris Sherman with Tech Support Farm. Make sure to check out his website, thefencecheck at techsupport.com will help decide what you may need for cybersecurity on the farm or agribusiness. So again, techsupportfarm.com. Addison, I think we're almost out of time. We don't have a call yet from Mark, do we?
And we do not. He's got 30 more seconds.
Mark Rambo, you got about 30 seconds left to call 701-293-9000. That's 701-293-9000 to qualify for the $10,000 worth of groceries. So, Mark, it doesn't look like
1 year.
Yeah, it doesn't look like you're going to make it. Sorry, Mark.
Nope.
Man. But
which means we're going to leave that JLA insurance phone line open for all those who want to call and talk to our guest today, Don Kinsler. And again, you can reach us at 701-293-9000. So, Don, one of the questions we got last week had to do with the effect of smoke on our plants and vegetables. And if we have a smoky Canadian wildfire-filled summer, will that retard some of the growth or hold us back in production and yield? What do you think?
Well, good afternoon. And I got to say, I was on edge for Mark just sitting waiting here. I was nervous for him. So anyway, yes. Okay. Now, when I drove to the studio and got out, I could smell the smoke today. I don't know if I could see it. It's cloudy anyway, but I could definitely smell that smoke. So yeah, good question. Is this having impact on our plants? And okay, at first glance, you would think, or first thought, you would think, well, okay, smoke can't be good for plants, can it? So anyway, I had a little time this morning. Well, actually, I didn't have a little time. I took the time to do a little research. I'm behind on emails. But anyway, I took time to do a little research on this and came up with some interesting things. And of course, okay, you think smoke. Plants bad. Okay. Obviously, if ash and soot falls on plants, it's going to block the pores. But also, the smoke itself can block the pores of plants, you know, the stomates in which plants exchange oxygen, they breathe, and all the things they need to do for photosynthesis. So, and the pollutants, of course, smoke, the ozone, and things like that can certainly adversely affect. But now, some research done at University of California, and also echoed by some things from University of Minnesota, said there is one unusual advantage to when there's smoke in the air. You know, when you can see it. Okay, now here's the advantage. The smoke in the air, even if it's upper, it diffuses the sunlight. Okay, and you think, well, okay, less sunlight. Okay, but let me take you to our greenhouse years. Mary and I had greenhouses for 25 years. Okay. The old style greenhouses were glass. Okay. Clear, crystal clear glass. Sunlight came through. Okay. Then when plastics and the kind of acrylic panels came in, okay, they were not crystal clear. They diffused the light a little bit. And what was revealed was that your plants actually grew better than they did in the crystal clear glass, because the little bit of a translucence in plastic and the acrylic panels, it diffused the light so that there were less shadows on the plant, and the plant accessed more light kind of underneath and all around because the sunlight was diffused. The plants used it better. And so there is research actually that shows that the layer of haze diffuses the plant, diffuses the light so that plants can actually use that light in the same way that some of these translucent greenhouses coverings can actually benefit the growth of plants. But now, okay, here's the kicker. Okay, so, and the answer is not in yet. Okay, so the bad effects, the ozone, the clogging of pores, okay, but they can use the light a little better. So which is going to win out? So I don't know. Research is still being done. Boy, it adversely affects human health, my health. And so I don't think we could say that smoke is a good thing for plants. Now, another interesting part is, in states where forest fires have been going for years and years, California, Oregon, California, where they've got more forested areas, vegetable production has been going on for a long, long time, and it's been successful. So, to date, it seems like, plants are growing okay. But again, research is being done, just kind of a small town boy, gardener, instinct is that I don't think the smoke is something we'd want to encourage. I don't think it can be long-term good for plants. Oh, I did come up with, there was another interesting part, in this as I did some research. It showed that a long-term smoke can change the ecosystem in an area. Okay, because trees are more adversely affected than other plants, and so long-term exposure to smoke in an ecosystem can switch it from forest to grassland, because grass, you know, is probably easier to grow than trees. Interesting little tidbit there. Let's see, I even made some notes. Oh, the other interesting thing, too, is that there are some invasive species of plants that the smoke triggers better germination in the seed. They found that. Okay, so, and of course, invasive species are not generally good. And so,
no, not really.
Yeah, exactly. And so, smoke can trigger some bad consequences even that way. So, you know, it's interesting. Although it might have some benefits in the light, generally, I have a feeling that long-term research is probably going to show that it's not a healthy thing for plants, and certainly not for humans. Does that help a little, Bridget? Does that help at least explore the situation? Again, University of Minnesota says they're not seeing an immediate reaction by plants over these last few years when it seems like we've noticed these. They aren't seeing widespread that either tomatoes, potatoes, that crops are failing because of it. They're not seeing that.
Mm-hmm. And in listening to the question from listeners, I think, personally speaking, and again, this is truly my opinion, because I don't think I would see as much loss in my garden to wildfire smoke as I might, depending on heavy rainfall, heavy saturated soils with compaction, or potentially just cooler weather where I'd have less growing degree days for plants to come to maturity. That's just a guess from what I think it might
be. No, I think you're absolutely right. For example, these past couple of years, if we see something in our gardens or yards that's not doing well, I would attribute it, like you say, soil conditions, moisture conditions, either lack of it or too much, other conditions, mm-hmm. disease, insects, rather than attributing a poor crop to the smoke that we've had.
So one thing that has been thriving, and I took a picture, Addison's got it for us. It'll be in our live stream on Facebook and YouTube and Acres TV, where you can find us on their Weather and Ag in Focus. Don, here's the photo. It is my begonia that we talked about last fall. I brought it indoors because it wouldn't die. And you said, oh, it's not one of those. It's really good at surviving the winter.
And it did. You have a green thumb.
Look at that.
Your thumb is green.
I'll kill it somehow.
You have my admiration because some begonias do winter well, the wax leaf, fibrous rooted, but those with kind of the pointy leaf like it looks like yours was, they're more of a challenge. Rex begonias, the other types of begonias, non-stops, tuberous begonias can be difficult over winter. So you did it. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. I got one thing right. We'll see how he does from here on out because I'm not making any guarantees of the survival rate on this sucker.
And Don, I've got a question. So I'm going to be landscaping the front part of my house, and I'm going to be putting numerous plants in there. Not sure what just yet. I'd like to put a rose bush as one, and we'll figure out maybe a couple of hostas, something like that. Would it be better to do it now before the hot weather hits or wait till fall?
I would do it right now.
Right now?
The month of June typically isn't hot. And I would do it. In fact, I am still doing it. I'm planting trees and shrubs.
Okay.
You know, I'd avoid the 100-degree days in July just because it's tougher on plants, but not impossible. But I would definitely get them growing now. Mm-hmm. Month of June is typically a great month to get going. Fall is great also for planting. You know, again, avoid maybe the hottest days in July. But I think we may have mentioned this before, but the invention of the plastic nursery pot was one of the best inventions ever in the garden center because it allowed a shelf life. It allowed the garden centers to sell plants potted up, ready to, you know, they'll sell them, you take them home, plunk them out of the pot and into, you know, of course, take some care, and into your planting area. You know, Dean, the first thing that came to my mind when you said you'll be planting kind of around your house, your foundation, the first thing that came to my mind is a mistake that many of us, most of us make. And I immediately thought, whatever distance you're coming out from the house, double that. You'll be glad you did. If you were thinking, let's come out 4 feet, Let's come out 4 feet, go 8 foot. And the reason for that is 25 years down the road, I've never heard somebody say, man, we came way out too far out. No, it's usually the opposite. people always say, oh my gosh, it looks like I crowded everything up too close to the foundation, because those little shrubs look so cute when they're small, but they grow. Mm-hmm. And coming out farther than you kind of are thinking is, you'll be happy you did.
Okay.
Yep. And you don't even have to wait 25 years. In about 5 to 8 years, you'll be happy that you came out far enough to give those shrubs the room to grow. And of course, we check the tag to see how wide a shrub, how right. wide and how tall. So not only the root system, but the space that that shrub will need. And so that's so common for all of us who are planting, is to check the width of that, to give it that footprint so they aren't going to look squished together.
Gotcha. All right.
Well, Don, I couldn't agree more, because as someone who planted her nine bark a little too close to the house on the wall that butts up against the bedroom, so on windy nights in the fall, it can make you question your sanity when you hear branches rubbing on your house. So keep that in mind. But keep in mind, we've got Don Kinsler here to answer your questions when we return from news. Don't go anywhere. Oh, this cool weather is great for wheat, and particularly our wheat with Here We Grow. Don't forget, the signs are up. Go out and find our field. You'll find it in Cass County. I can give you the legal definition if you're looking for Gardner Township, Section 29, the Northwest Quarter, or you can find it 1 mile south of the junction of County Road 11 and County Road 34. Signs are there, and you're going to want to make sure to find that QR code and use it to enter yourself for a chance to win a $100 gift card for locating our field. Thanks to two of our sponsors who've been a big part of this project. One, ND Estate Services. Mark Wagner wants to make sure that you have peace of mind when it comes to transition planning, estate planning, and so much more. Give him a call at ND Estate Services. And then additionally, if you are thinking about putting up a new building, there's a big shout out from Thor Buildings for you as farmers. And they want to make sure that you have the ultimate in post-frame construction, as well as the right size building for your farm equipment or livestock. So make sure to give the folks over at ThorBuildings.com a call. Don Kinsler joins us today. Don, we always have so many questions from folks when it comes to what's happening in the world of horticulture, gardening, and so much more. I know this is going to sound a little crazy, but I did get this one texted to me. I was able to plant my cabbage seeds in the ground on Memorial Day weekend. Do you think they'll make it to maturity?
I think they will. And of course, there's a reason why a person usually plants cabbage transplants, you know, rather than the seed directly out into the garden. But a reason why we either start our own early indoors, I start our cabbage around March 15th in our basement under lights, or you go to the garden center and you buy cabbage plants, cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower plants, and then transplant them out. And the reason for that is because they take a certain number of months to produce a food crop for you. And if you just plant the little cabbage seed directly out into the garden, it takes that much longer. So let's see, so I probably start mine 2 months at least, give them a head start. So if the seed is planted directly out on Memorial Day, and if depending on the variety, if you start having cabbage to eat sometime July, August, it's going to be iffy. Cabbage can take a little frost, but that cabbage is probably going to be sometime in the fall, rather than July, August harvest on the cabbage. Again, there are early varieties, late varieties. But anyway, see what happens. Water it timely so it grows well. Maybe give it some fertilizer to coax it along. And then if you find that it's just so late in the season, then next year, make a note to use transplants or start the seed early indoors, March 15th.
All right. And we have Terry. Terry's on line one. Terry's got a question for Don. Terry, what's your question for Don?
I have an area, that for probably 20 years has been covered with rock, you know, has plastic laid and then rock. And I would like to plant a couple shrubs in the middle of that. I'm wondering how big an area do I need to remove the rock? Is that soil still viable after being covered for all these years? I guess that's mainly it. And then my thinking is I'd remove an area of rock and plastic, plant the shrub, and then replace the plastic in that area with something, you know, a permeable fabric or something, and I want to put the rock back down.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. So, okay, when you peel the rock and plastic back, and that used to be a way that we landscaped rock and plastic, but then we kind of found that the plastic kind of kept the air from exchanging good. And so anyway, what you'll likely find, you're in the Red River Valley area here, Fargo?
Yes.
Okay. So you'll find when you peel the rock and plastic back, you'll find the soil is very compacted. You know, years of having the heavy rock on there will have just made that soil almost where you can't get a shovel in is always what I've been through similar things as you have. And so what you do is you peel the rock back, peel the plastic back. Try to work up that soil a little, add some organic matter to it to get a little, because it's going to be heavy clay. Peat moss, compost, you know, work as much in as possible. You know, at least a 3-inch layer put over the surface, maybe more, work it down in really, really good. And then depending on the size of the shrub, you know, I'm thinking at least a 3-foot diameter area that you'll want to peel back and kind of get it, get more air into it, and then plant your shrub. And then landscape fabric allows better air exchange than does plastic. So landscape fabric is a better choice than the plastic. You know, it's interesting. Rock isn't as plant friendly as other mulches. You know, wood chip, shredded bark mulch are more plant friendly. They don't weight the soil down as much. But, you know, rocks last longer than shredded mulch, you know, obviously. So in many, areas, rock mulch, here I'm looking out the window here, everything here is mulched with rock. And so, the fabric will help so that soil doesn't become quite so clammy and so wet under there. So then replace the rock. And let's see, does that about cover it? Follow the instructions on the tag for planting it.
Okay. And like you said, maybe a 3-foot diameter. And
yeah, I'm thinking at least for most shrubs, I'd peel it back so you got at least a 3-foot diameter that you're kind of working in there to kind of get the soil a little kind of back in shape a little better.
Sure, and then that would be a big enough area for it to get moisture when it rains and that sort of thing.
Exactly. Yep, that'll be plenty. Okay. And, of course, you won't have to dig the planting hole won't need to be 3 foot for a common shrub that you're planting. But at least that'll let you kind of work up that area and get it kind of get some air into it and less compacted.
Great. Hey, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for calling.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Terry. All right. Thank you, Terry. And Don, you know, that poses a good question because I was talking about landscaping my whole front and you could see it's got the cloth fabric or it might even be plastic. I haven't even dove into it that deep yet. Do you have to have any fabric down there or is it okay just when you're planting the shrubs just to put the rock over it?
It's mostly for weed control.
That's what I thought. Okay.
Yep, because the weeds control any perennial weeds, and they have a way of, even if they've been kind of masked for a number of years, you know, Canada thistle, quackgrass, and some of those persistent weeds, they'll have a way of disappearing for a while and then coming back to haunt you. So, you know, so once that, if you have nothing, no underlayment under that, those can easily spring up between the rocks. You know, so it's interesting. Rocks, you would think would be, kind of a weed-free situation, but you know, as leaves, kind of decompose, leaves get caught in between the rock particles and they decompose, they kind of make their own soil. And so weed seeds can drop in between rocks over time and sprout. They don't need much, they don't need much soil to grow. So even rocks, you need to do weed maintenance. But the reason for the underlayment is to prevent the root type weeds, you know, things coming from an established root, especially from coming up, and then also some seeds that are still persisting in the soil to prevent them such easy access. You know, many seeds can last for decades and decades. Purslane seed can last 40 some years in the soil and still be viable.
Now, when you're doing weed control, Do you recommend, I know Roundup is a good one to use, but again, a lot of people don't like using that because it might not only kill the weeds, but it might kill, you know, something you just freshly planted. Is there anything else that you would recommend that would kill the weeds but safe to the other plants around it?
Well, two different ways of doing that. And this is a common question, Dean. You know, okay, how do we deal with weeds in landscapes, perennial gardens, you know, et cetera? Okay. So we're all looking for a product that, okay, in our landscapes or perennials, where you have a mixture of shrubs, perennial flowers, etc., but you've got weeds that pop up. We're all looking for a magic elixir that you could spray over the top of everything, and it would separate out the weeds from the good stuff. Well, that doesn't exist, okay? So that means we have a couple of choices. We could use a pre-emergent herbicide. The most common yard and garden one is Preen, in the big yellow and red labeled containers, and that you apply to clean areas. It kills weed seeds as they sprout. Keyword there being weed seeds. Okay, it's not going to do anything about dandelions, Canada thistle, quackgrass that is growing from roots, okay? But it can cut down on those annoying little annual-type weeds. I'm trying it this year to see if the elm seeds will not sprout everywhere. I'm trying to see the active ingredient is trifluralin.
Yep. Yeah.
And so I'm seeing if that'll cut down on the elms that are so annoying, the seeds. So anyway, okay, pre-emergence can help. But anything that's coming from a root, Canada thistle, dandelions, quackgrass, we need to deal with those because they're gonna escape that pre-emergent. They're gonna grow right through it. So that means we need to spot spray. If it's quackgrass, there are some over-the-top grass killers that can be used. Just say you have quackgrass growing through a peony or a shrub. There are over-the-top. One is called Ortho Grass Be Gone. Bonite has one called Grass Beater. These are at garden centers, too. Let's see. The high-yield line of products has one called Grass Killer. And they're slow-acting, but you spray that right over the top, follow the label, and they'll take the grass out. But if it's broadleaf weeds, you know, dandelions, thistle, and they're growing in broadleaf perennials, there's nothing that's going to just selectively take those out.
Right.
The broadleaf weed killer would also kill your broadleaf peony. Okay, which means, so what I do is I take an eyedropper, and if I have a thistle, with an eyedropper, I get the glyphosate, active ingredient Roundup, just into the center growing point of that thistle. Uh-oh. If it's a tree that's growing right in the middle of my dogwood, I clip it off at ground level, and with my eyedropper, I put a little bit of the weed killer right down on that freshly cut stump, and that will kill it. So it does mean some, it does work, but you know what in life isn't work? You know, it's worth working for. So anyway, the easy solution is kind of not there.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, and like Don was just saying, when it comes to using something like glyphosate, which is a very broad spectrum control product, that targeted application matters. He's using an eyedropper. I have a squirt bottle that I can use that can get right to where I need it to go. I want to remind everybody, if you are doing that, if you are taking product out of its original packages, you need to label it very clearly because you have no idea how many times those of us in agronomy get a phone call where somebody says, well, I put it in this other jug and I don't know what it is now. Can you identify it by like smell? And it doesn't work that way. So you've got to label it. Make sure you're using your protective equipment. Wear your gloves, long sleeves, long pants, closed-toed shoes when you're doing that application. And just like Don said with a product like Preen, using a trifluralin, which is a root and shoot inhibitor for control, it's not going to kill anything established. That's only going to control as that seed germinates and sends up its shoot or root above or below ground, and that's the only way it's going to control them.
You know, Bridget, too, is
a little bit better on specifics.
When you mention that product too, the Preen, the trifluralin, when a person reads that label on the Preen, that product needs to be either incorporated into the soil, or if you're using it on top of mulch, it needs to be watered in. The label is quite specific on that. Sunlight will quickly damage that product, degrade it. And so that application, when I use it on top of mulch, I immediately follow it with, my sprinkler is maybe a little hard to judge when it's by hand, but getting at least an inch or so, but follow the label, an inch of water to activate that product is very important too.
if you're using it in the garden, make sure you know where it goes. If you're using it around like your peas, okay, that's fine. But then don't plant your potatoes there next year because that will not be fine.
Boy, you got it. The other thing that comes to mind, too, you know, we talked about, you mentioned your little spray bottle and my little eyedropper. But also, sometimes maybe we'd use a two-gallon pump sprayer. But, you know, the two-gallon pump sprayer for spraying weeds, if it's close to something else, even your lawn, and you're using it for glyphosate, which will kill most things if they aren't glyphosate ready. But anyway, those pump-type sprayers have an interesting way of overspraying. The mist, you might not think you're getting overspray, but that mist. A classic example is, okay, someone had a round area around a tree, probably 5 foot diameter. They had rock mulch in, and they were spraying some thistle that were growing in the rock. Well, all around the outside perimeter of this rocked area, the grass was dead. Well, the pump sprayer was giving off just enough mist beyond the area that they thought they were targeting that it killed a band of grass right around. So it was a classic example of how that mist can wander a little bit. So sometimes a cardboard shield will be effective too if you're using a pump sprayer, just to make sure you don't have that mist that's drifting.
And my neighbor wanted me to ask you this. So they've got four dogs. Great, great dogs. And she was going to spray the Roundup in her rock garden, but she was worried about the dogs. You know, if they get in there, that is, and I said, I'll ask Don, but I'm pretty sure that's poisonous to animals, even if it gets on their paws and whatnot.
Always go by the label direction. We all need to follow that label direction specifically, and there are care required on there. Mm-hmm. So I follow that very carefully on whatever product you're using. If there is a wait time before humans and pets can enter that, maybe certain products say do not enter that area until the product has dried.
Okay.
But that label, Bridget, in your experience too, normally these will say what the safe reentry interval is. Bridget?
Yeah, her mic is off. Your mic is off, Bridget.
Oh, sorry, there we go.
So, I was afraid we had lost you, Bridget.
So any federal label will show you that there, just like Don said, there is a reentry time, and it tells you how soon you can go back into a treated area, whether it's any pesticide, and if it relates to humans or animals. Keep in mind, in the way of glyphosate is a contact killer. It dries very quickly. Usually it has about a 1 hour drying time, but you are told to stay out for 4 hours before you get in there with like the weed whacker or anything like that, because it allows the glyphosate to translocate through the plant so that it can thoroughly control throughout the plant, not just burn off those particular leaves that it touched. Okay, that's the first thing. Second thing is, it is not necessarily considered a poison. The LD50 on glyphosate is safer to us as humans than coffee. And so we have to be cautious. I didn't mean to trigger the balloons on my iPad. Whoops. And so you've got to remember that. Follow the rules, just like Don was saying. Know what the reentry times are. You don't want pets in there licking them right after you've applied. But those things are very safe to use if you follow the labeled rules. Don't forget your personal protective equipment as well. So, Don, as always, you give phenomenal advice.
You know, Bridget, as long as we're talking about glyphosate, another common question I get is, okay, a person wants to do a new vegetable garden or a perennial garden or whatever. Okay, so we need to kill off the grass. Glyphosate is quite effective at killing lawn grass, so we can spray the glyphosate. And usually when I do it, and I just did a patch now, usually within a week or so, you see pretty dead grass on it. Okay, and but then a common question is, when is it safe to plant into that? Well, an advantage of glyphosate is that it is soil deactivated, so there is no generally soil carryover, so you are free then to plant immediately after you make the soil workable and plantable. In fact, when I was a young student and we were killing things with different herbicides, okay, when we were using glyphosate, one of the things that they mentioned, if you get that, okay, and I mean, these were plots of high-value trees, shrubs, etc., okay, so they said, if you get glyphosate on something that it's not supposed to be on, okay, yeah, if you've got water, wash it immediately, but if you don't have water there, scoop up some soil and get soil on that plant that you might have put on, and that at least has some chance of mitigating that.
Yep. All right. Well, fantastic. Well, Don, thank you so much for joining
us.
It's always
pleasure.
A pleasure
thank
to have
you
here.
Thank you guys for inviting me. Oh, thank man. You. I appreciate it.
Not a problem. So for Don, for Bridget, and myself, we want to thank everybody for joining us today on Weather and Ag in Focus. Don't go anywhere. The Jay Thomas Show is coming up next.